First of all, I want to ask you, why do people call you Mazi OJD? I've been wanting since you came. I said that was going to be the first thing I'll ask you. Why? Why? What's behind Mazi OJD?
Ah, well, it's a long story. I'm a very Nigerian person, and I didn't really have much ties to my roots. You know, as a traditional Igbo man, grew up in the north, lived so much, many years in the west. Wow. So I had to like add something that would, you know, show the connection to where I'm from. And Mazi just means Mr. It's the Igbo translation of Mr. Just like we have Ogbeni, Arabic.
Yes.
Mazi Ojede is just Mr. Ojede.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you for joining us on the show today. This is Civic Band. And yes, you're our third guest for the year, so we're excited to have you. My name is Nancy Odemegu, and we have Daniel Ojukwu, a Nigerian investigative journalist. Nice to have you join us, Daniel.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes. Is it the, you know, you're gentlemanly, is that? I mean, just the economy outside that's making you gentle like this, bye.
Nah. I'm a very reserved person. I breathe work. I love to work 24/7, so I hardly socialize, and if I'm not working, I'm very quiet and reserved. Yes.
So I can see you're an introvert.
Kinda.
In
my own space, I'm.
You like yourself. Oh, okay. That works. Anywho's, thank you. So last time we were on Civic Band, we talked about what it takes to follow the money, and we talked about how citizens can come in to track. But apart from following the money, now there are some of those government projects that citizens are not. They don't really, you know. For instance, you're a Nigerian journalist. You know the right questions to ask. You know where to go. You can access places that irregular Nigerians can access. You know they fear anything. I put them like that. Citizens now, there's a level at which we want to say we no go like advocate for something. But you ask the who is who. You will ask the who is who question, right? And in like towards the, I think Q3 of 2023, you were part of the privileged GovSpend fellow. So I want you to tell us how your GovSpend experience was generally, and you know what motivates you first of all as a journalist before we go into the nitty-gritty of today's event.
Okay, so the GovSpend fellowship was actually a very unique experience for me, because prior to my time with the GovSpend fellowship, I'd already dabbled into a number of fields and beats in journalism. I started with law and crimes, delved into security and conflict, did a bit of climate, did health, did education. So I've done different beats in journalism. And leading up to the GovSpend fellowship, I was already doing more work on fact-checking and conflict reporting. So business and finance are fields that have always appealed to me, because not many people understand them. And I think some months before the GovSpend fellowship, I had done this explainer on the I&E window.
Okay.
And you know, it was something that people were talking about often, that yes, this guy did an explainer to show that the I&E window wasn't what a different media house had published. So it then occurred to me that yes, many people do not understand finances, many people do not understand numbers. And I thought, oh yes, I could fine tune this with the fellowship. And I spoke about it with a number of people who brought it to my notice. And I went and got the training. I mean, Budget provided an amazing platform. The training, the mentors, the facilities were thought with, helped us create ideas, generate ideas, go to the field, uncover things that we are erroneous in the Nigerian contract space. And Nigeria is a very funny place, because you just need to shake hard enough. You don't even need to try hard. You
just shake one table
and something will fall. Because everybody is, there's this anyhowness to things where people just
do as they like.
Exactly. Contractors.
Because no one is monitoring them.
Exactly. Nobody's looking.
Yeah.
Nobody's asking the right questions, and they feel they can get away with it.
So you mentioned some things, like, you know, when you started, I think you said there was some wrongdoings, like people are just doing anyhow. What are some of the findings that your investigation brought to light that maybe were sleeping, nobody was paying attention to it then while you were doing your fellowship?
Okay, so one of the things I found out was that a restaurant was paid money to build blocks of classrooms in Surulere.
a restaurant, collect money,
yes,
to build blocks of classroom, yes, in Surulere here in Lagos.
And you know, while making my findings, I got to learn that the woman who owns the restaurant,
yes,
where the money was paid into, didn't even know that her restaurant was used for that purpose. Yes, I got to learn that her son, who is a civil servant, was the one who facilitated the whole thing, got a lawmaker, got the chairman of APM party, that's Musa Bagana.
Yeah.
He was also in on it. There was a large network of people who were involved in all that, and they just collected the government contract and they paid 147 million. And the funny thing is, before you can propose a contract is supposed to solve a problem.
Yes.
If you want to fix roads, it's because the road is bad. If, yes, you want to build classrooms, because there's no classrooms. Now, this contract was awarded to a school where there's no space to build classrooms.
So where do they want to plant the blocks of classrooms?
Exactly. So it was later on when they had collected the contract, they went to do the survey and realized that there's no space. So there was no problem in the first place. They were collecting money to solve. Then they decided that, oh, since we've collected this money, let's just go
and build it somewhere else.
Anywhere else, and say we've completed the contract. So that is a problem that the ICPC had identified in 2019. How lawmakers just insert constituency projects and say, okay, yes, let's build this and put a random name. So nobody tries hard enough. If they were indeed trying to cover their tracks, they may have gone to find somewhere that needed a school.
And then sink the school there.
Exactly. So someone just sat in his bedroom somewhere and decided, oh, let me just write a random name and put it there. They award the contract.
So that will even ask you that, okay, so most of what we have on those contracts, actually what Nigerians want, or it's just like you said, someone just sit down one day, 147 million, let me look for a way to just carry it.
Yes.
Because if really you identified a school that needed blocks of classroom, then it comes in handy. And I will now be saying, but how is restaurants the agency?
Exactly.
That one, at least the school needs it first of all. It's just that it is the wrong agency that they are passing to do it. But now, it's first the restaurant. Then the school does not even have space. You want to relocate the old school, or how do they intend to do it? So did they eventually build the classroom, or they did it in just put something else separately?
What they eventually did was they moved it to two different schools. That they went, what they were supposed to do was build a skill acquisition center and blocks of classrooms in one school.
Yes.
Then they went to build a skill acquisition center in one Lady Lark,
then build another blocks of classroom
in a different school. And it was just vagueness. So it had violated procurement law, and all they were just doing was patch to, you know, to say we've done something.
So who's supposed to hold them accountable now in this regard?
In this case, the ICPC is responsible for corrupt practices.
Okay.
This is a corrupt practice. You have just done something shady.
Yes.
Paid into the wrong accounts, you know, awarded the wrong contract. And NEFGAD actually stepped in. That's the Network for Actualization of Social Growth and Development. They stepped in, they wrote to the OSSAP SDGs, then a lawmaker came into the picture and said he mediated, the contractor surveyed after the contract was awarded. So everything was just a huge mess. So ICPC, NEFGAD wrote to EFCC to investigate, but I currently do not know where that investigation has headed to, but ESC should be aware by now, and we're hoping that someone checks these excesses.
I want to ask you about your challenges. What are those challenges that maybe you experience now? Like, is it just easy? Like, for instance, now, how do you realize, okay, that it's a restaurant that received the money? Was it just easy? Did they just open their books for you? Like, what are the challenges you encounter while trying to investigate some of these things on behalf of Nigerians? Because you are really doing the Lord's work for us.
Okay, so challenges are massive. And as a journalist in Nigeria, you have to understand that you face a lot of this. First off, the GovSpend platform was helpful in the sense that it had already cleaned data from the Open Treasury. The Open Treasury portal was initiated by the government in, I think, 2022 or so.
Yeah.
And the government made that portal so complex. It's supposed to be a platform where citizens can talk through and get information, but
yes,
it's too complex. It's difficult.
It's very difficult for them to understand.
Exactly. So the GovSpend platform simplifies that. And during my research, I found that I was touring through the OSSAP SDGs contract awards, and I got to see Enseno GV, and like, okay, let me just look into this. Only for me to then see the, even their website is very poorly done. They just, you know, when you're building a website, you're supposed to put organic material, just, but they imported so many things, white chefs, Lorep Ipsum, just template material.
Yeah.
So it's not even up and running. It's just,
just basics. A demo.
Exactly. So then we had to pay lawyers to get to go dig in to get us their MEMAT, that's the object for their for while they're set up,
okay.
The registration with CAC and everything. And then we tried getting information from the OSS API SDGs. In Nigeria, people do not honor FOI requests. It's a major challenge for every journalist. So you write to these people, and the FOI Act mandates everybody to provide information. Government agencies, public officials, provide information as long as it doesn't threaten national security.
Yeah.
But they failed to. 7 days elapsed, 1 week, 2 weeks, nobody responds. We wrote to the Nseno GV, they failed to respond. We called them and everything was so shady. So the big challenge Nigerians face, Nigerian journalists face, is lack of access to information. You write to people, they don't want to provide anything. You call them, they don't want to provide information. And then when you go to press, they come hard on you. They start asking questions, why did you do this? Why did you do that? And they try to cajole you. I remember Bagana called me once, and he was, not once, he called a number of times, was offering bribes and trying to kill the story, trying to get us to collect whatever sum of money he was willing. He admitted on the phone that yes, we did wrong. Yes, we violated this. Yes, we're
that's regarding the restaurant story.
Yes.
Hey, God.
He admitted wrongdoing. He was the one who volunteered information and said yes. The woman who owns this place didn't even know. And it was her son who is the civil servant.
That's orchestrated everything.
And they did it together. But the son couldn't come forward because the civil servant, and he can't speak to the press.
Yes.
So in this case, we're trying to, he began calling other journalists. And I tell you this for a fact, some journalists in Nigeria are the problem of
our country.
Yes. So there were journalists who were calling, trying to pull the story down, saying
there were journalists calling on behalf of him.
Yes.
Trying to, like, should I say, suppress your own story
trying
now.
Trying to get us to pull the story down. They would say, oh, they're veterans, they've worked in this space.
If you have worked, what do you consign us?
There's so much that goes on in the media space. There are people who would get into government or get into the corridor of power, become press release men, write anything on behalf of these people.
Yes.
And they feel that, oh, because they're veterans, they can speak to you and
you would feed, yes, you would answer them.
That kind of thing. And then so many other people will call and say, oh, we appreciate your work, you're doing amazing. Oh, can we sit down and talk? I followed your previous work, you do amazing, but there's this particular story, I feel that you could have done this, you could have done
good
that.
Good cop, bad cop.
Exactly. So there were so many, and what I did was, when I was getting those calls steadily, I called Bagana and said, look, I know what you want. Just tell these people to stop calling me.
Yes, at least. Kilo de.
After that phone call, the call stopped. He first denied it and said, oh, he's not asking anybody to call. I said, look, I'm not in notice. I know how these things work. But just tell your people to stop calling me. If you want to ask me anything, you can ask me yourself. And then after that, nobody called any longer. Those who were saying they will call back, they will fix.
They didn't call again.
They didn't call again.
So are you not scared of what does your security look like? Because let me tell you the truth. If I were you and Bagana calls me, and then I have some OGs, some veteran ogas that are saying, I have been in this business for 20 years. They saw Nigeria when Nigeria didn't have democracy, when Nigeria had, they've been writing for Nigeria since Obasanjo. I will be scared at some point. So, I mean, I know journalism at some point, you know, if it be maybe that kind of energy, that's what you need. Because in a society like Nigeria, if you want to bring about the change we need, you have to really put your foot on the floor. So, are you not scared?
Fear is relative.
No matter come again. Fear not a cash.
I don't want to pass the wrong message.
Yeah.
Now, if you see a doctor who is operating on an emergency patient, a random person may faint, but then you see a doctor running an operation and he's just carefree, he's just doing his thing.
Yes.
And you wonder, doesn't the blood
makes him want to, yeah, that?
Are you not concerned? And he tells you, oh, I've been doing this for a long time. So it's not that there's no fear. It's just when you do this for a long time, you get trainings, you practice, and then you know the right things to do. You know where to go to, you know what not to do, you know the kind of course to take. Nobody can randomly call me and say, let's meet somewhere and I go.
Yeah, okay.
There are always backings. There are relationships you build. there are things you do to ensure that you don't end up in the wrong place. And once you're standing on the right, it gives you some kind of confidence. If you're not sure of what you're doing, or you're scared of a lawsuit, you're scared of somebody coming after you,
yeah,
then you don't know what you're doing. If you do your work judiciously, you do everything
and you get
right,
your facts right.
You get your facts right. You're going to stand by it anywhere. You speak to that fact and nobody can shake you and say, oh, we're going to file this lawsuit, we're going to make you pay, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to come after you. And it's, when I hear these things, I just feel, oh, it's the regular. I've heard this a number
several
of times.
Times.
I've been arrested a number of times.
Ah.
Yes.
Ah. Serious.
It's abuse of power. It's abuse of power. It's different people come up and say, oh, they want to show the power. The wise ones don't go that far. The ones who are ready to, you know, throw around power are those who are not that wise. They just go and call a random police officer, oh, arrest this person, let me show him. At the end of the day, you give more credence to the story. You give
meaning
more
that you're trying to hide and suppress it for something is there. Something
exactly.
is there.
It draws more attention to your wrongdoing.
Yes.
And there's something I usually say. The price of fear is more expensive than the price of action.
Hmm.
If you do something about something today, then it'll be suppressed. That problem would be suppressed, even if it's by a millimeter or a small number. But if you keep quiet, it gives the other party the opportunity to keep doing what they are doing, to keep oppressing you, to keep, you know, taking advantage of you.
What threw me off now was this arrest that you mentioned, because when they arrest you, you know, if you say this Nigeria work don't even tire myself. Say, why am I killing myself for these people?
The first person that got me arrested was a pastor.
Eh?
Yes.
For a story to Abi, for his church wahala.
A story?
Uh-uh.
Yes. I have a story about the pastor who was molesting underage girls. Yes. And I can tell you for a fact, I called one of this. In the story, I didn't name any of the ladies because they were minors in their sources. But the man knew his victims, so he went after them.
To intimidate them not to speak.
To intimidate them and ask them why they
spoke to
me.
You.
And then the night, there was a night where he was challenging one of the victims, and she called me while he was with her parents and some female church members. And then this pastor has two daughters, or he had two daughters at the time I did the story. Very young, 8 years, 10 years at the time. So one of the women was saying in the background, I was hearing over the call, and she was like, even if he did it, is he the first one?
Hey, Osal, oh Lord.
That's the Nigeria we are in. People are fine with God worship. They worship men so much that even if the politician is stole money,
they are not the first to do it. So it's now a normal thing now.
Exactly.
So when politicians steal money, not the first time, not be Nigeria with the.
Yes.
How will things then get better?
A sitting governor was caught on camera collecting money as kickbacks from contractors, and he was voted back in. And people defend him and say, yes, he is their savior, he is their leader. He is currently a party chairman in Nigeria.
So, wow, I think I know the person you're referring to. Yeah. So there is a lot going on behind the scene, and really that's why this conversation is really important, and I'm grateful about having it, because they say, oh no, go no no. Nigerians may just sit and, you know, like they don't know what is going on unless people like you doing the good work bring it to the fore. But there's something that I know that are in the minds of Nigerians that I want to ask right now. You know, you mentioned earlier, you know, just said it in passing, that to some extent Nigerian journalists are kind of like our problem, and then that comes in with the brown envelope factor. So Namaz the OJD, I'm not saying anything, but I just want to ask, you know, on behalf of our fellow Niger people, many people will be like, even him that is talking, will he say, shall we say, he have not collect before, ni and put in his pocket. Somebody, you don't collect, have you never collect? So that we'll know, do you understand my point? So that we'll know the few good ones, and then the few not so good ones. Because I still know that journalists today, I mean, some of them use their ID card for their meal ticket. You won't, I don't want to talk about that one. I don't blame anybody. You know, the system is the way it is. Media houses right now are not really the way it is. It's going to be so what makes you different? Let me just use that word now. Or your work different?
Would I say I'm different? Well, this is the fact. Journalism is a profession.
Yes.
It's a job. People do it to earn money. And I wouldn't say, I'm not one to judge anybody for the kind of practice they pursue. The only time it becomes a personal problem to me is when their work jeopardizes progress.
Your own, okay, progress, yeah. Generally.
Generally, if you're attempting to silence the masses, then you're a problem. If you're attempting to feed off of people's pain,
then you're indeed a problem.
Yeah, so journalists who practice a number of...
across different fields and sectors. Yeah.
They're business journalists, they're sports journalists, they're entertainment journalists.
Yeah.
They're journalists who do a number of things for... They tell different kinds of stories.
Yes.
So the space I dabble in is social justice.
Okay.
So, and human interest journalism. And if you're doing human interest and social justice journalism, you can't come with unclean hands. If you're doing whatever kind of journalism, that's fine. It's 100% perfect. You can tell whatever kind of story
you want to.
It's important work. But then once you're doing social, the work I do is social justice and human interest. It's not for profit. We don't do adverts. We don't take on adverts. Because if we take your adverts, it means...
You're paying us in a way.
Yes. And we can't hold you to account.
Because you're our client.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's true. So if not, no carry business come again.
Exactly. So if you're a bank, if you're a financial person, you can't come to me and advertise.
Okay.
But if you're a grant, if you give grants, you give donations, fine. We take those. So it ensures that the lines aren't blurred. You can't come to me and tell me that you did a wrong, there's a wrongdoing, but because of $2,000, I should keep quiet about it. No. You can't ask me, what's my vested interest? Why am I? Am I part of this society?
What do you want to gain?
This is social interest. It concerns the public. Have you done wrong or not? The next thing you're asking is, why are you interested in the matter? Did anybody send you? No. If you're right, you come with clean hands and show me that you're right. Or if you think I am right, take me to court. Let's stand before a judge and you can tell this judge that. But some journalists are... We've seen journalists who would stand on the right side for a long time, and then when they have the opportunity to go into power, not all of them. I have friends in government who are former journalists,
okay,
some who have never practiced, and these people stand on the right side all the time.
Hmm.
There are some people in government who are amazing, but there are some who would stand against these bad eggs for so many years, and then they get the opportunity to taste power.
And then they become like what they are standing against.
Exactly. If you read the newspapers of the 1990s, the early 2000s, the likes of Bayo Onanuga, what they were writing in those days, what they were exposing. If you were reading the opinions of Festus Keyamo and Co., and then you listen to what they are saying these days,
you'll be like, sure they are the same person.
There's a
that kind of thing.
You read someone like Femi Adesina, a very sound man. He used to be very notorious for his amazing journalism. And then you read his book on Buhari, the same Buhari we all experienced, and you begin to wonder what's going on. So it's not a Nigerian thing only. I mean, in the US, CNN and Fox are on opposite divides. CNN is Democrats, Fox
is
Republican. So there are people who choose their biases. In Nigeria, TVC is on one side, AIT is on another side, Horizon is on that side. So it's normal, but you have to filter what you consume. As a Nigerian, that's it.
All right. So, how can Nigerians then come in now? What do you want citizens to do better now than what they are doing before? To help us further expose some of these things.
Okay. I always have very controversial opinions about citizen participation. One thing I know.
Why?
Because I'm a huge fan of sociology. I like to study society to see how best to tap into our uniqueness for social growth and development. Nigeria is different.
Okay, how?
From a number of countries which we like to compare ourselves to. Every average Nigerian would say, look at the UK, look at the US. We don't always tell ourselves, look at Ghana, look at Burkina Faso, look at Malawi. This is our reality. We always like to pander towards the West and say, oh, compare ourselves to the US, compare ourselves to the UK. But there's a great divide. The average American man will tell you he's American.
Yeah.
He will hear his national anthem singing and he's on one spot singing it. The average Indian man is the same. The UK are the same. They believe I'm a UK person, I'm British, I'm English and all that. But the average Nigerian is from Igbira first, is Fulani first, is Hausa first,
is Igbo first.
Exactly. He has to first identify with where he's from. And if you look at the way Nigeria is structured, the northern part of Nigeria shares a lot of cultural similarities with Niger, Chad,
yeah,
and other countries up north.
Yeah.
While the average Nigerian down here shares similarities with Benin Republic. So if someone in Osun, Ondo is similar to someone in Cote d'Ivoire, Benin Republic, in their cultural norms and practices, while someone in Sokoto, Adamawa is similar to someone in Niger, Chad, how then do you create that connection? So there's a way the southerners perceive Nigeria that's different from the way the northerners perceive Nigeria. I remember the last time we had a massive global nationwide protest. We called it nationwide, but it wasn't nationwide.
So how was it? What wide was it?
Yes, we're having protests in Lagos, Ogun, Abuja, and Delta, and so on. But then we had people in the north asking that the south we want to end down south, let's bring them to the north. The Borno State governor pretty much said so that yes, bring this SARS to the north. We don't want to end SARS. We had people come out to say anti-end SARS protest.
Yeah, there was that too.
So we didn't have a nationwide protest. We had a southern protest. But we in Lagos, Ogun, Abuja, we like to believe that whatever happens in Lagos is nationwide.
Yeah.
It's the way the US imagines that Super Bowl is global, NBA is global. We're just not in tune with reality. So if we want to be involved actively as citizens, we need to wake up to the fact that we have already been, there's a word I like to use, we're narcotized.
I will break that one down.
You know, if you take opium regularly, you become numb.
Okay.
So in Nigeria, we've consumed a lot of bad news to the point where we become numb to it. Go as far back as 2005, 2006, 1990s. Armed robbery was a big story, front page. You hear armed robbers break into a house, kill two, rob 30 million. It's front page news. Fast forward to 2009, 2010. Front page news is bomb blast.
Yes, insecurity.
Nanya. The next thing you're seeing is bomb blast. Once there's a big bombing, big news.
Headline.
2014, the next big thing was abduction. Once you abduct 20 people from a school,
you make the headlines.
It's trending for weeks. You abduct 100. But these days, you abduct 30, 40. We talk about it for a day and we move on.
Yeah.
So, armed robbery is not, if you rob a house today, it's not making front page. It's going to be somewhere at the back.
Because we're used to
it. If you hear a bomb blast somewhere, we're used to it. You hear an abduction, we're used to it. You hear that someone stole $6.2 million at the forged Buhari signature, we're laughing. Because we are now used to these things.
Can they show us that will surprise us?
Exactly. So we are not angry. We can't get angry anymore. It will take a whole lot. Probably if someone steals the entire budget. Maybe we budget 1 trillion naira for this year. Someone steals the whole thing.
Then he go shake us.
We can now shake. But you hear that someone stole 60 million from government coffers. Not just 60 million. How much is 60 million?
Chase snake swallowed money.
Exactly.
The monkey not swallow money. Still in our country.
So all this bad news has narcotized us. We are not angry enough to then challenge the status quo.
We've adjusted to it. Because we don't want it to get to us. You know, there's a way you don't want to have BP on someone else's matter. So you just look for a way to just manage the person.
Exactly. There was a time Idi Kabasa was speaking on Honest Bunch podcast. And he said he doesn't watch the news any longer because it's just bad news.
Okay.
You turn on your TV and all you see is bad news. Bad news sells every day. But journalists don't make the news.
It's things that happen that actually make the news, the front page.
We're distracted by the entertainment industry. Our entertainment industry is booming. Music is amazing.
Yeah.
Sports is amazing.
Yes,
movies.
Actually.
Those things are what Nigerians want. The Nigerian dream is to japa.
Standard now.
Enjoy the entertainment. Go into skit making if you can.
Gather money, japa.
That is it. So, we need to refocus. I often say this, that End SARS protest wouldn't have been what it was if not for entertainers that were involved.
actually.
Those who followed it from the start would know that from day one, there was Runtown, there was Tiwa Savage,
yes,
there was P-Square, guys who marched to the police.
And so because they matter, then the government have to listen to what the people are saying.
There was Naira Marley who met with the police chief. And when people were marching that first day, they were marching behind the celebrities because they know nobody will shoot.
Yes, actually.
Naira Marley sat down, Davido sat down with these guys, and then he gave Nigerians a ginger. When Nigerians heard Macaroni was at Alausa,
they went there. Yeah.
Because they knew, oh, nobody's touching this guy. Let me go behind him.
Yes.
Then the next thing, celebrities were coming. Nas Boy, Small Doctor, Love were coming to Alausa, coming to Lekki. So with that protection, that you know that someone is there in front of you, I can go behind this person.
Yes.
It is what gave Nigerians the courage. All these activists that are coming out say, yes, we're the ones that, yes, they played the role. Journalists also played roles in that protest, yes. But what made it as big as it was?
The celebrities.
The people who Nigerians considered influencers.
Mm.
Those celebrities were influential to the protest. So if Nigeria wants to get back to where it really should be, we need those names that would spur Nigerians to come forward.
Yes.
Put them at the forefront. Let's all consider that, yes, we have reached our breaking point. Let's ask these people questions. Put Fowls back on the road. Put Tiwa Savage back on the road. If you have nobodies on the road without names, faceless people, the police will come up with their water canisters, throw tear gas and everything.
And everybody disperses.
Everybody disperses.
Yeah.
But we need something new. We need people to refuse these peanuts. Tell them, we're not accepting your bribes. We're no longer listening to you. We want the change. They will change.
Wow, that's a lot. Thank you for that. It's been interesting talking to you. You've really opened our eyes to things from another angle, and I'm looking forward to having you again, you know, because there are more that we need to delve into, but don't worry, we'll work towards that. So while we wrap up, just, you know, give us some recommendation. If you were to talk to the government now for them to change what they're doing, maybe change the way they roll things now, what would you tell them, and what would be like your last word, really?
Okay, if I was the president of Nigeria today, the first thing I'll look at is governance. Some people will say the number one problem of Nigeria is insecurity,
mm-hmm.
number one problem is corruption, but no, number one problem is governance. We need to decide how we want to govern the country, because it's one thing to say you're putting policies that would help the people, but we have to suffer first, and then you don't show us that you're suffering with us. Because if you're telling us we have to buy bags of rice at 81,000, and then you are budgeting 160 million per head for vehicles you would use,
It doesn't correlate.
It doesn't show us that you're in our shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
You're showing us that you want to enjoy, you want to live exorbitantly, then we have to suffer. You have to bring everybody on board. Every problem we've ever had in Nigeria is a problem of governance. We haven't decided that we are ready to govern Nigeria. Everyone who comes on board is down for his own self.
Yeah, for their personal interest first.
A Bayelsa Minister of Petroleum is stealing money, Alison Madueke. A president from the north, Buhari, Northerners are doing their thing, Emefiele is stealing money for himself. But then, if we look at every problem that has ever happened, the militancy, it's because they felt cheated. The insecurity, the Boko Haram, the bandits, they all felt cheated. The Fulani herders will tell you that they feel cheated, that the Fulanis have been marginalized for a long time. IPOB will tell you we are cheated, that the Igbos were never accepted since the Civil War. Everybody in Nigeria feels cheated
one way or the other.
If you bring everybody to the table and tell them you have seen, we are going to recognize your struggles. We are going to act in ways that show that you belong to Nigeria.
Yeah.
It solves a lot of problems. You no longer have the idea of, oh, I need an Igbo man to be in government before I can feel like a Nigerian is ruling me. Or I need a Fulani in government before I can feel a sense of Nigeria or a sense of government. So yes, that's what I'll do.
Governance. You tackle governance first. Thank you so much. It's been nice having you. It's been an interesting conversation so far. So, but before you go, you give us a shout out. Our new podcast, Civic Band. Tell people why they should listen to us, because we are the only ones that bring the bass boost to the table. Nobody can bring a Mazio JD other than us. So we are that special. So please give us a shout out, Civic Band. Yeah.
Okay, yes. I do suck at, you know,
shout outs
and all that. But you're listening to Civic Bands. This is where you have all the informative material on governance, on advocacy, on keeping up with spendings in the country, in keeping up with policies. Stay tuned, pay attention, because it's only going up from here.
Yep, thank you. All right, that's it, people, on today's episode. Thank you for listening. Please follow us on social media. It's BudgetNG. Mazi is Mazi_OJD.
Yes,
on Twitter. All right, don't stop listening. Right, we have about 3 episodes out now. Leave your thoughts, leave your feedback, and we'll get back to you. Thank you so much. My name is Nancy. Until the next one. Bye for now.